and welcome to Inside the Admissions Office, the official podcast of Ingenious Prep and your go-to resource for expert admissions strategy. My name is Noelle, and each episode, I'll bring you behind-the-scenes knowledge from former admissions officers about their firsthand experiences reviewing applications. Our strategies have helped countless students gain acceptance to top universities, and we're here to help your student gain that competitive edge and do the same. If you would like to set up a complimentary strategy call, simply follow the link in our episode description, and our expert team of enrollment counselors will work with you to create a personalized plan for admission into your student's dream school. Hi, everyone, and happy results season. I've had a lot of listeners reach out and ask about next steps after decisions, especially as Ivy Day has just passed. So this episode is dedicated to all of you seniors out there. And for this episode, I'm joined by our wonderful Ingenious Prep former admissions officer, Krista. And we went over all the possible scenarios, what to do if you've been waitlisted at your dream school, possible next steps if you don't have the acceptances you'd like, and how to choose the best school for you if you're deciding between multiple offers and acceptances. So this will be a pretty comprehensive episode. We have a lot to cover today, so I hope you're all ready, and let's jump right in. Hi, Krista. How are you today?
Hi, Noelle. I'm great. Thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be here to discuss results and how to make exciting decisions about the next step in each of these college kiddos' careers.
I love that we're having you back on because, one, we got so much positive feedback from your episode. Everyone loved you. And also, it's fitting because on your last episode with us, you talked about how you got one of your students into MIT last year. So it's absolutely fitting that we're having you back on to discuss results and next steps. But before we start, though, for anyone who missed our last episode with you, can you briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
I am Krista Pickett. I am an FAO, or former admission officer, with Ingenious. That's my title because I was an admission officer at Williams College, my alma mater, go Eves. My role there was evaluating applications, traveling, recruiting students, sitting in on the incredibly humbling admission process where about 80% of the students were academically viable, but we could only take about 10% of them. So I learned how we make tough decisions and exactly what goes into forming a dynamic class. My role at Ingenious is to work with students to build their candidacy, to create their college list. We'll discuss that more because as we discuss results, we see the importance of building a balance list. And then, of course, this is one of the most fun parts of the job because I get to then consult with students about where they want to live for the next 4 years, the opportunities that they get to take advantage of academically, extracurricularly, and personally. This is a really exciting and rewarding time of year, certainly.
Perfect. So from observing your students and other counselor students, what do you think the competition was like this year?
Every year, the admission rates for top schools, I'm thinking schools especially in the rankings, maybe the top 30, are seeing admit rates that are less than 50%, right? So you and your best friend, you and your twin apply, and the chances are that one of you will not get in. At some of the top schools, including the Ivies, we're looking at admission rates as low as 4.1%, I think, was Duke's admission rate this year. I always try to give perspective to students. That means 96% of students were turned away. And that's a solid A for rejection at a lot of these top places. It's something that we can't take personally, but is a reality of the picture. So certainly highly competitive. And we have to remember that every high school has a valedictorian. You know, as an admission reader at Williams, I can't tell you the number of perfect SAT scores or near perfect ACT scores. So we're not just competing with students at our school, our province, our region, wherever it is, our state. We're competing with fellow biologists, computer scientists, linguists from all over the world. What we're seeing is that it's very difficult to earn admission, even to schools that maybe for our parents, our older siblings, didn't seem as selective a number of years ago. But here we are, it's a different kind of math in 2020.
It's so wild to think how the competition just keeps getting higher and more competitive with each year. You know, we already say it's competitive and every year it just gets harder and harder, which I'm sure feels really overwhelming to think about. But in terms of results, let's start with students who have been waitlisted. What should their next steps be?
The waitlist is exactly what it sounds like. They're not saying no, right? They're saying that we'd like to keep you on this active list of students who are interested in our school and who we know would be a great fit here. We just simply don't have the space to admit you currently. Waitlist is earned, right? It's not something that's offered to all students. That's very important to understand. One thing I like to highlight as a former teacher and current test prep tutor is to read carefully all of your instructions. Every school has different nuances for how they handle a wait list, responses that they need, how they interpret expressing interest. Instructions to remain on a wait list are important to follow. Following those to a T is important to show how seriously you're taking this opportunity. If admitted, you would potentially be a student that the college could yield. That's a number and a statistic that the colleges care very much about, is the percentage of students who they admit who actually decide to come to the college. No school, not even the most selective, you know, heralded colleges that we think about, has a 100% yield rate. I like to say even Harvard loses some students to Williams. I think of the waitlist as a chance for them to say, we'd love to have you, please hold. So students who are on the waitlist should engage with the school in all the ways that they'd been doing so previously. So that could be social media, that could be opening and engaging with emails. It might be following up with a contact that's pre-established in the admission office. It's also following directions. If there is a letter of continued interest that is accepted, that's absolutely welcome and encouraged. You can either reach out to your counseling team or work with a mentor, a teacher to brainstorm some updates and reasons that you're a good fit that would be compelling and new information for the admission committee. Other schools have more specific information. The one that comes to mind is University of Michigan. They want a 250 or less word update in their admission portal for waitlisted students. You send them a 10-page paper about the reasons you should be a Wolverine, that would probably not be well received. Reading the room is very important here. One of my favorite anecdotes actually comes from William at the small liberal arts colleges. Every admit is a strong, loud voice in the room with only, you know, 2,000 students and 550 per class. We were very open to students making their case. And we had a waitlisted student who sent us one year 2,000 hand-folded origami paper cranes in the school's colors, purple and gold, alternating on a string. And we hung it around the mailroom. And the student just kept following up weekly, respectfully, with different declarations about how much they wanted to come to Williams, why they were a great sit, how they wanted to be one in those 2,000. It was something that definitely left an impression on the committee. Certainly, it depends on the school. That would not be the go-to strategy for all colleges. Don't spam all of your admission officers. This is where determining fit is important. Often coming off of the wait list is a result of knowing how to appeal to that school, what its priorities are, and what you really bring to the table.
Perfect. Two things. One, I love how you phrased it as in, it's not an end all be all. This is it. This is a dead end. You're almost encouraging students to think about it as, listen, they could have rejected you completely and been like, no, we're not interested. But by being waitlisted, they're still giving you that chance, however slim it is. But that door is still cracked open, right? And two, I know with your students, you've in the past called the letter of continued interest as almost a love letter to the school, which I absolutely adore. Can you tell us more about that and maybe some tips on how to write a great letter of continued interest?
The letter of continued interest, the LOCI, it's colloquially known as a love letter. Exactly. The letter of continued interest. You can think of it like roses are red, violets are blue. You're writing to the college to have them accept you. We typically recommend no longer than a page. Beyond that, it's your personal appeal to the school. They've already asked a number of questions of you in the common application for the most part. They might ask some prompting questions as far as academics or extracurricular updates. But really, it's your time to shine and let your personality peek through here. And again, it's where fit can really reveal itself and where a little bit of thoughtfulness and personality can come off of the screen and make an impression on the real live person on the other end of this LOCI, this love letter. After submitting those applications, ideally, you've been maintaining your grades, continuing to make an impact in your extracurriculars. You're a leader on campus and in your field. You have stuff to say to these admission officers. Even if it's a new activity, a fun hobby that you've picked up, you want them to see that even without the incentive of a college acceptance, you continue to grow and learn and imagine all of the fun surprises that you'll bring to campus if they just admit you. That's the tone of the LOCI. I recommend bullet points and short paragraphs and using details. So specific instances that either show how a student has grown, an accomplishment they've made, something that is related to an event or a theme on that particular campus. An example, recently, a student had read a book by a lecturer that was visiting the campus that they were appealing to on the wait list. That speaker was going to do a few courses over the course of the next year. And so the student wrote about how they would like to engage with that speaker and how the tenets of the curriculum at that school are in line with the way they'd like to study. We're looking at very specific appeals to why the student's a fit, an admission that students are excited to be on the wait list. They are eager to keep working. If admitted, they are likely to come. And again, it comes back to that idea of yield. Admission officers want to see that if they offer a precious spot off of the wait list to this student, that they're likely to say, wow, thank you so much. I'm going to go. For some context, a very selective school on the West Coast in California, this was in the last couple of years, we have intel from some FAOs on the team. The last couple of years, they had very different wait list numbers. I think the first year they had something like 200 on the wait list, the next year 50. The first year they took something like 10% of students off of the wait list, the next year they took 10%, but of very different numbers. The wait list fluctuates as far as the number of students that they have seriously actively on the wait list, and even the number of students that the committee is able to ultimately pull, because it depends on the students who say yes or no to that college. There are a lot of moving pieces. April is for students to decide where they're going to enroll for the next 4 years, but then after that is where waitlist movement really happens, because only then do colleges have the true numbers of the students they've yielded and know there are gaps in their class too.
So I feel as though the key point here is to highlight, one, your excitement to be on the waitlist, but also two, how you, the student, would fit within the school. So for example, I know for seniors who may have started a research paper but didn't have the chance to get published in any journals before college applications were due, if a student did, in fact, get published at an exciting journal, this would be a great opportunity to highlight that in their LOCI and tie it back to maybe an organization or student group at that specific college that their research initiative aligns with, right? So similar to that, I guess the incorrect way to go about it is, here are my accolades and awards I've gotten in the time you haven't heard from me with no context. Is that correct?
It's a tightrope of, and all of admission is, it can be uncomfortable. With a number of my students, I have to kind of coax them into bragging about themselves because most people are pretty modest. The letter of continued interest is, yes, a chance to brag and to flex. So if you won an award, a competition, particularly something on brand with your application, you still want to be backing up what we think of as your application persona. We're not adding in random accomplishments that are not indicative of what you'd like to do on their campus. It's also an opportunity, yes, to express genuine enthusiasm. Some of my students have expressed that they almost wish the letter of continued interest could be part of the application originally. In many ways, it is with the Why School essay. When we're applying to colleges, there are often supplemental essays in addition to the main personal statement that allow you to indicate interest or certainly to express fit in the indication of the programs you'd like to participate in and so on. Many of my students have expressed that they feel the letter of continued interest is their opportunity to speak very directly to an admission officer in a format they choose. So even though we do recommend, again, keeping it to a page, keeping it professional, having a traditional salutation, thanking them for their time and so on, it's fine to inject a sense of humor, some personality, a little bit of rah-rah, go team. I'm following along what's happening on campus and I'm thinking about this. I can't wait to be a part of that. And to remember that this is the point where quite literally they are choosing you off of a short list. That's the mentality of the wait list. You are already academically, extracurricularly, and personally qualified. Now they are just deciding who's likely to come, who they have room for, and who's a good fit.
Perfect. And now I'd love to go through the flip side of the waitlist. What are some alternatives or backup plans students can explore if they are not ultimately accepted off the waitlist?
A waitlist is an opportunity to get another decision, possibly to come off of the waitlist. It's not a promise for admission, no matter how convincingly or compellingly you appeal to the admission office. If ultimately a student is not pulled or admitted from the waitlist, it's important to evaluate your other options. That includes enrolling at another college or institution. Again, I want to backtrack a little bit, and maybe this would be a good opportunity to go back to listen to some other Ingenious podcasts as far far as building a balance list based on your own profile, so that by this point, ideally students have a few options, even if they are the safeties or the target options. If students are not admitted off the wait list, it seems that there are two options. Consider a school that they were admitted to and move into it, or to look forward to it as a stepping stone, potentially to a really happy 4 years, because ideally they've built a list that they're excited about with the help of their team, and they've done the research that is fulfilling. My soapbox is that there are so many institutions where students could be happy. There is not one single school. I've never met a student in my hundreds, thousands of students that I've counseled where I'm convinced that there's only one college where they will be happy, where they will thrive, where they can reach their dreams. Once students are enrolled, they can think about whether they would eventually like to transfer, but I extremely encourage students to start that first semester with a positive outlook, with pride in where they were admitted, because no matter where you were admitted, the fact of the matter is that college admissions are more competitive than ever. It's difficult to earn admission to most of these schools, especially a school that is less than a 50% admission rate. If there isn't a college or university that you'd be happy to attend, we can consider what we call a gap year. Gap, meaning the time spent between high school and college. And many students will use that time to reapply, either with a different list or a new approach to their application. Every student who takes a gap year has a different path that they walk. Of course, it will be a critical part of your application to explain how you use that gap year to further your candidacy, grow, and further evaluate how you can be a contribution to the campus.
You mentioned gap year, which got me thinking, because even when you're in a job interview, usually if there's a gap in your resume, it raises some eyebrows, right? They'll ask you about it, like, what were you doing during that period? So is that the same in college applications as well, if students take a gap year? And are there possibly some negative connotations to that? What are your thoughts here?
Admission officers are like detectives. They want to know your alibi, what you've been doing with your time, so to speak. That's why on your activity list, in your transcript, they're accounting for what you're doing in the classroom, in your free time. Certainly, if you take a non-traditional path and after graduating from high school, you take a little bit of time to yourself, either to work, to do a post-grad year, to reapply to college, whatever it is, to travel, do an internship, grow in your art. They want to know that it was intentional, that you had a plan and that you followed through, and that you saw some kind of meaningful result. My students who have had productive gap years, the experiences have ranged from travel, spending time with family. Some have taken personal gap years. Others have done internships, full-time job placements. Others have enrolled in specialized courses, either artistic or language, as like a kind of pre-college idea to determine whether or not they ultimately wanted to pursue that degree.
Perfect. And we talk about the importance of creating a balanced school list. And I feel like as much as we talk about it, it's almost overlooked, right? I'm seeing a lot of discourse online of parents and students who are really shocked by their student not having any acceptances from schools this current admission cycle. And again, this is why we spend so much time building school lists with all of our Ingenious Prep students to make sure that all of their schools, whether they are Reach, Target, Safety, they are all well-researched and places that our students could see themselves at. So what are your thoughts here? And do you have any advice for these students who are in this really tough situation?
It's important for students to understand that as a cautionary tale, that these are not underperforming students. These are students who are at the top of their class with scores that are very impressive, robust extracurriculars. If they apply to 10 schools, for example, 10 of the most competitive schools, maybe they're earning an acceptance from one. When you think about it numerically, that means a 90% rejection. It means that student who's valedictorian got 10%, which is a number that these students are not used to hearing. So it's a really jarring landscape here. For students who do not have options that they are satisfied with, or who have yet to be accepted to a school kind of later into the year, continue to be active on wait lists. Also look into schools that have rolling admission. Rolling admission means that they accept applications sometimes all the way through August. If the deadline is open through May June, it is still reasonable to apply to express strong interest in those schools. In the age of technology, if you go ahead and give that a Google as far as colleges with later deadlines, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by the wide variety of institutions that are still accepting applications. Again, those could be schools that you enroll for 4 years or schools that are a stepping stone to the next part of your educational journey. When reapplying or reconsidering what's next, especially if you are in a position where you don't have any acceptances, it's important to be candid and forthright and maybe to reflect with a counseling team about the best path forward. It may be to reconsider application materials. I'm not saying to second guess everything that you've submitted. I'm saying to consider the statistics for the schools that you're applying to, whether or not academically you're a good fit. This is a viable school. To consider how you present your activities, whether you can articulate your fit a little bit better. I will raise an uncomfortable truth for students who did not earn acceptances and who are kind of questioning what might have happened. Part of what I would say to a student would be to do a frank reflection on whether the materials that they submitted were coherent, were consistent, and were truly a good fit for the schools on the list.
Perfect. And lastly, for students who have been accepted at multiple schools, which congratulations and what an exciting and wonderful position to be in, how should they go about choosing the right school for them?
This is what it's all about. When we have multiple offers, this is some of the most rewarding experiences that we have as counselors and certainly for students. This is in many ways what students have been working toward, students and families, for years and years. Congratulations to students who are fielding multiple offers. Very exciting stuff, especially if there are a couple of schools that you're really thrilled about. The things to consider as far as offers are wide-ranging and they depend on the student. Assuming that you're excited about each of the schools on the list, things to consider include location, feel of the school, the programs that they offer, all things that, of course, students were hopefully considering in addition to the name and the prestige. Things like, what can I study once I'm there? What will my freshman year look like? Where will I be living? What is the dorm situation? What's the food? Am I going to be able to meet my other needs in terms of class time? Students will probably be in class in college much less than they are in high school, an average of maybe 12 to 20 hours per week, depending on the type of class and whether you have labs, lectures, so on. It's crucial to think about how you're going to fill those other 100 plus hours in the week. That includes extracurriculars, spare time, access to internships, social opportunities. This is, again, not to overuse our phrase, but all about fit. The memory that I have from choosing my own school and what many of my students report back to me is that there's simply a feeling, either when you receive the admission decision, when you visit the school. What I hear by the end, once students have multiple offers, have visited many places, is more about the types of conversations they have with fellow students on campus, the way that the conversations flow in classes that they've observed, the events that they observe on campus calendars when they look at the website, doing that detective work, the same detective work that admission officers do when they're determining whether you're a high flyer worthy of admitting to their school. You're doing the same research where you're determining, okay, on a Monday morning at 9 a.m., will I be intellectually happy to be here? Same thing on a Thursday night, on a Saturday at 11 a.m. Are there things I'm going to find fulfilling at all of these times? Those are personal reflection questions that only the student perhaps truly knows the answer to, but are worth asking and worth exploring, either with friends, family, a counseling team. There might not be a particular algorithm or formula, but I do sometimes notice that my students who end up maybe unhappy on their first campus and wanting to transfer, perhaps were looking at features for the school that were not tailored to their own fulfillment. They're looking at rankings or offerings in very niche fields of study, and come to find out, 17, 18, 19 years old, you change your mind a lot. To set yourself up for 4 years of living that could be as dynamic as those 4 years in high school. Think about how much you've changed and grown over 4 years in high school. You want to allow yourself exponentially more opportunity, even in college. Many different facets to consider, and the priorities are weighted differently depending on the student. And being in touch with what your own priorities are and why, I think, is the only fail-safe way to end up on the right campus.
Perfect. Now, for current juniors, rising seniors, what are some big learnings that they can take from this current admission cycle so they can best prepare for their college applications?
Grade 11s, juniors, should observe the current admission cycle as a cautionary tale and also as motivation. Every year, I say that college admission is an art and a science. We can make certain predictions, but then they're blown up right in front of us when a decision or a result comes out. We can learn from case studies, we can follow the trends, but ultimately, it is a process through which a student must be very in touch with their own internal set of rankings, determine what the goals are and why, and to be open-minded insofar as the goal of an education and what we're looking to do, how we're seeking to grow.
Perfect. And before we wrap up this interview, do you have any parting advice you'd like to share with our 12th graders?
Ultimately, for grade 12 seniors, this is a whirlwind time. Because let's not forget, while we're looking ahead to undergrad, we've still got both feet on the floor as seniors in high school, which is bittersweet in a lot of ways too. So pause and take time to reflect on your options. You made it to the other side of the college admission hill. All of those essays and activity lists are behind you, which is reason enough to celebrate on top of your other hard work and accomplishments, of course. Also, remember not to take admission decisions personally. Trust me, as somebody who sat in on many difficult conversations and decisions in the admission committee room. Colleges have a number of institutional priorities that we as applicants will simply never be privy to, ranging from recruiting enough classics majors, oboe players, or North Dakotans to fill in the blank other need they have to round out their class or fill their programs. So even though, of course, we're very invested in the decisions, we're hopeful, we have to learn, sometimes for the first time in our young professional or academic lives, that we might do just about everything right. The scores, the grades, the extracurriculars, an excellent application, a great fit, and it still doesn't always work out. So that is hard to watch, but it's an important perspective to have. Remember that college is more than a degree, but a lifestyle. You've got decision-making power here. So which campus is lucky enough to claim you? At this point, all grade 12s should be thinking with both their heads and their hearts. And from all of us at Ingenious, a hearty congratulations. We're thrilled for your next adventure.
Fantastic. Thank you. And echoing what Krista just said, congratulations to all students. We're so excited for your next chapter. And if you'd like to check out our own Ingenious Prep student results, be sure to check out our blog, which will be linked in the episode description. But as I'm recording this, we already have 14 acceptances to MIT, 10 acceptances to Yale, 9 acceptances to Harvard, 9 acceptances to Princeton, and truly the list goes on. We're so incredibly proud of our students and all the hard work that went into building their incredible applications. So another round of applause for our students, and we'll keep updating the blog so that we have the most updated numbers and results for you. And as always, I hope this episode was helpful. Please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any questions. Have a great rest of your week, everyone, and we'll see you next time for another episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. And if you would like to speak with one of our experts, you can set up a complimentary strategy call with one of our enrollment counselors by following the link in our episode description. And for more information and access to additional resources, you can register for our webinars, which is also linked in the episode description. If you have any questions or would like to request a topic for a future episode, you can email me directly at noelle.kim@ingeniousprep.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of Inside the Admissions Office. And don't forget to follow the podcast so you're notified every time a new episode is available. That's all for now, and I hope you'll join me next time as we continue our journey inside the admissions office.